Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 53 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again today on the podcast. We're going to have a kind of a 2019 year in review with Tracy Wilson and myself, where we'll kind of talk about, I guess, what our favorite parts of 2019 as far as the CCFR is concerned were, and maybe even looking towards 2020. So all that and more right after this.
Once you lose rights, it's nearly impossible to get them back. Right now, there are politicians and bureaucrats working day and night to eliminate your ability to own and use firearms in Canada. They're talking about not allowing you to keep your firearms at home and even taking away the ones you already have. It's not a joke. It's not an exaggeration. Activism is a lot of work, and most people don't have the time. But something that you can do is support the CCFR. For $40 a year, you can be a part of the hardest working firearm organization in Canada and get $5 million worth of insurance. The CCFR lobbies government and works to improve the public image of gun owners through media and educational campaigns. Protect your own ability to own and use firearms before it's too late. Go to firearmrights.ca and click Why Join. That's firearmrights.ca.
All right, we're back, and on the Skype, I've got Tracy Wilson. Hey, Tracy.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and to all of our members and supporters. We really appreciate it. And so what Tracy and I were talking before, and we are going to do put in the utmost effort to try to keep each individual topic short, which is a problem for both of us. And we're going to try to cover some of the highlights of 2019. So why don't you get us started?
Okay. Well, it was a really busy year. A lot went on, like a lot. I look back at the year and I can't believe what's happened, right? But I've narrowed it down to sort of my three favorite moments. And then, of course, I've got a bonus. So number one would be the integrity tour. So this was during the election. I'm sure everybody saw it, where we, after some chatting, we ended up with this crazy idea to get a full 30-foot RV, get it wrapped, and go around and door kick at some liberals. And of course, we ended up with the infamous Bill Blair video out of that. But to me, it was just, I don't know, it was that feeling of desperation, like we got to do something and this is crazy, but let's give it a try. And, it just, for me, it shows how far the CCFR will go for its members. So that was the most recent one. And then my second most favorite moment, these were really hard to narrow down, was the lobby doctors, but in specific, their National Day of Inaction is what I call it. So this was their big, kind of day of protest, where in cities across the country, they were supposed to have their supporters come out and they would be calling for gun control as part of a medical, with a medical perspective and whatever. And the photos started rolling in from around the country from this day of action. And, the one in Calgary was one of my favorites. It was like this doctor's basically standing in a ditch with his clipboard and his white coat on and three people standing there. The pictures rolled in from across the country. And I mean, I'm not laughing at their failure. What I'm enjoying is the fact that their kind of negative messaging, just it's not resonating with Canadians. And that was a perfect proof. And then my third most favorite moment from C71 was basically almost took the entire year, which was the CCFR leading the fight against C71. Now I'm talking about from the moment this bill dropped, within hours we were on the phone with Minister Goodale getting a briefing on the legislation itself. We were on the Hill. We had a lobby week. We had a roundtable with, all the MPs that are working on this file. We testified at the House committee, both of us. We testified at the Senate committee. Like, we were in front of this thing from the get-go. And, nobody works harder than the CCFR. And all three of my favorite moments are good indicators of that. And then my bonus that I throw in, this is just a personal little thing, was when Natalie Provost quit CFAC. So people may remember, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago now, I had a petition with Michelle Rempel as the sponsor to have Natalie take some education in gun laws so that she would be better suited to fulfill the duties that she was tasked with, which was advising the minister on the firearms file. So here she was, the vice chair of this committee, who is supposed to talk to Minister Goodale about gun stuff, and she literally knows nothing, right? So I didn't think that our petition was asking anything crazy. And I got so much heat in the media over that, and it was, I'm insensitive to the victim, and, what you know, God forbid I asked that she have some topic knowledge. Anyways, Provost and I kind of went back and forth about that multiple times. I had a little bit of an issue with her being on the committee. I think it was a, kind of like a vanity appointment. And in the end, with C-71, as ridiculous and long as it took them to get that bill through, it just didn't target gun owners hard enough. You know, it just didn't hammer legal licensed firearms owners over the head enough to please her. So she stomped her feet and literally quit the committee. So yeah, I wasn't sad to see her go, and I wish her the best in the future in whatever it is that she does.
Well, and you know, that whole thing is just a really perfect example how there's no reasonable conversation to be had, how there's no middle ground, because, you know, from a gun owner's perspective, like this woman was shot 4 times. She's emotionally destroyed. And if I was shot 4 times and I'm just trying to go to school, I would probably be in close to the same condition as she is. So no one's trying to hurt her, but yet she's absolutely relentlessly vicious against everybody who wasn't there. And of course we're saying, you know, that's not fair or whatever. And then it's actually their side that always drags that into, oh, you have disrespected a woman that was just like, no, nobody's disrespecting anything. Her opinion is wrong. And I don't think that she should be coming after us. That's not fair. Nobody, we didn't do anything to her. And apparently, you know, and it's actually the anti-gun side that turn it into this hyperbolic shrill screeching that no one can stand anymore. And if you want to look for reasonable voices, you have to look over at the pro gun rights side. And you intuitively, you think it would be the opposite, but anyway, yeah, I mean, that was a good moment.
Yeah. So I didn't exactly crack open the champagne when she left, but it was satisfying to me because, the official response from Minister Goodale about the petition that Rempel and I had had done asking for her to get some education on the topic, you know, within that official response, he said that it would be, you know, cruel and unusual punishment type thing to force her to sit through the course. And I thought, well, wait a minute, if it's so cruel to ask her and it would be such a punishment and an imposition on her to get the education she needs to do the job she's been tasked with, how on earth is even sitting on that committee not cruel or unusual punishment?
Yeah, the whole thing's a joke, right? It's just a big scam. Her appointment was a political appointment, I think is what you were searching around to say. And
yes.
Yeah, the whole thing's just a big scam, just like their whole story. And it's pretty bad. So I kind of wanted to chat about all the different ones with you, mm-hmm. but you kind of rattled all four of them off in one blow.
Oh,
but
sorry.
No, not a problem. But the doctor's miserable day of action. We were talking before, you know, I started recording about how there was these, no one showed up in the majority of the cities, like, you know, 2 or 3 people kind of thing. It was just a total failure. And then of course, you know, in Toronto, they, you know, that's their base. And in Montreal, those are the epicenters of gun control in Canada anyway. But I remember the pictures that some of the media were showing. It was like, oh, there's big crowds in Toronto. And then somebody had taken a wide picture and they had everybody huddled together. And I was like, oh God,
well,
these guys,
yeah, of just, course.
It's just such a scam. But some of my favorite parts, I think were the reports that we put out. Those were real achievements. So the media bias report, and it's important to have actual real evidence when you make claims, because their side is all about claims and no evidence, you know, or very little of it, right? Or it's misinterpreted. And then, of course, also the intellectual malpractice report about the spin doctors for protection from guns. They are flat out liars. I actually challenged them to come after me for saying that. They are liars. And I can demonstrate that. And so that report was really important because it is a rebuttal to their lies and their propaganda. It also shows who they are. They're disingenuous people. In the case of, you know, Najma, we've seen some of her behavior, what she's all about, and it's not pretty. And then, of course, you have Alan Drummond, who's a key member of that group. And he's probably one of the most broken, horrible people I think I've come across. And it just shows exactly what they're all about. And it's also going to make a really good, should there be more legislation coming down the pike at us, this will be a really great thing for submissions to prove, hey, you know what, these people, they sit in the Senate, they tell you the evidence is clear, it's unequivocal, it's overwhelming, it's in, the evidence is done, there's no debate. And it's like, you know, it shows that they're flat out liars, which is horrible. Not only are they diminishing the image of doctors, but it's discrediting their whole side. But, you know,
absolutely. And it is horrible because here's the thing, at the end of the day, whether I'm a gun owner or I'm not, that's irrelevant. You know, I'm a grown adult living in this country. I want to see positive changes. I want to see a crackdown on crime and violence. I actually want to see the things, you know, that would make a positive impact on public safety. I also, of course, want to keep my guns. But the bigger picture is, while they're doing all this stuff to gun owners, they're not actually putting the work in to make that positive change. And people like her contribute to that. And that's, you know, she's called me out a few times for saying that. And Polly Soussouvien as well. They, you know, I say, well, look, you guys are going to have to wear it. You're adding to this by always redirecting the focus away from crime and violence and onto gun owners. This is insane, right? And it makes me afraid for the future. I've got two kids and a grandson, and I really do want to see things get better in the streets of Toronto and Surrey and all across the country. So,
yeah. That's not what it's all about. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to spend the whole time talking about them, but it's interesting. People like Drummond and Najma and some of the other kooks that they have over there, they're quite pleased with themselves, right? They just love it. They're like, oh, we're the crusaders. And you know what? Literally anyone with an IQ of 80 can advocate for gun control. Like, any idiot can advocate for gun control and get total support from the media and the government. It's you need to have so little talent, you know, to advocate for gun control and be held up as a hero, because it's literally gun control is an intelligence test. You know, you know, of course you're going to get support. So it's not an achievement at any level. But whatever. I mean, these are attention seeking. Oh, here's something you don't know.
Oh,
yes. Yes. Okay. I should have queued this up, but, give me one second.
So that's okay. Just talk into it. Yeah.
No, I found it. Okay. So I was looking through Drummond's, Twitter feed, with one of my, we'll call it a backup account. I'm not calling it a troll account. I'm calling it a backup account. And this guy is such a nut. He's actually one of my favorite people to look at his Twitter feed, because he's so insane. It's actually startling, right? Because he's actually still treating patients. But he, on the 30th, he tweeted 63 times. Like, this guy tweets, it's not unusual for him to make 100 tweets. And those 63 times, and those are just the main tweets, but what he'll do is he'll actually make a statement and then he'll reply to his own tweet like 8, 10, 12 times, right?
Oh, wow.
And there's nobody else in the conversation. He's actually just patting himself on the back for tweeting. And so anyway, in one of them, oh yeah, he's crazy. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's probably well over 100 tweets that he did in a single day. Like, the guy's, he's got serious issues, right? And then a whole bunch of them are, you know, anybody that disagrees, he's like, now I'm adding you to my famous blocked list. And he can't take any debate, right? He's got real problems. So anyway, he tweets out, he says, physicians should be given the mandated freedom, comma, nay, the social responsibility to help identify those at risk of owning firearms. So people like him should be determining whether people can own guns or not.
People like him.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like yeah, that guy is so off the rails that it's terrifying because he says he's a gun.
I was on the 30th. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. He specifically should be the one that determines whether or not you can own firearms. Like, you know, does anything else scream I'm a monster than that, right? Anyway, onwards and upwards. One thing I'd really liked from this past year was the Bill Blair consultation.
Yeah.
So that was actually a fantastic experience, and it was some real open, honest conversation, and it actually resulted in an honest report. Mm-hmm. If you read the Bill Blair report, it was actually really good, and then he ignored all of it and did what his just operated on a political basis, what his party wanted, and that was it. So completely ignored his own report and his own evidence.
Well, and you attending that consultation actually was kind of against all odds. I don't know if people know, but they held 8 or 10 of these across the country, and they sent you an invite to the one they were holding in Toronto, which is interesting because they know full well you're based on the West Coast. So they had one in Vancouver, I think the day or 2 days before the Toronto one, and didn't invite you to that one. Now, this isn't mm-hmm. like when you testify at a House committee or a Senate committee where you can claim your expenses and the government would reimburse you. This is all at your own cost. So I think the idea here was, well, we're not going to invite Rod to the Vancouver one because it's a hop, skip, and a jump for him, a quick drive over, and Timmy's later, he's good to go. We're going to invite him to Toronto, where neither him or Tracy is, and we're going to put the onus on him to spend the money for his own travel to get himself there at this very, very short notice.
Drop 5 days' notice.
And run. Yeah, it was insane. And they assumed you probably wouldn't be able to make it. But of course, like every other thing the CCFR does, it's, drop everything and all hands on deck. So away you went to it. But I still, to this day, feel like that was totally intentional. They could have very easily have invited you to the Vancouver one. However, you would not have got to see Wendy. So, you know, there's some positives and some negatives.
Well, and I got a chance to call her on her deception as well in person, mm-hmm. which is great. Didn't make her happy though. I thought it would kind of, you know, with me, if somebody called me on something and I'm like, I might be wrong. I would have debated my way out of that and said, well, yeah, you might be right, but here's consider this or whatever. Just like nothing. She just was like, you're a piece of garbage. That was really what her face said. And she
totally didn't say nothing meaningful after. Conversation.
Yeah. And it was interesting because she had said that the evidence, you know, it was extremely clear that the the problem is I really ripped it up on New Year's Eve and I'm still paying for it because I'm too old.
Proliferation
of firearms equals violence, right? More guns equal more death. And I said, well, how can that be when the United States doubled the amount of firearms in circulation over a 22-year period? And it wasn't like doubled, like there was 100,000 guns and now there's 200. It increased by 180 million firearms. Mm-hmm. Right. Like just this is the biggest case study in human history on the proliferation of guns. Yet their violent crime rate actually dropped by 50% during that same period. And firearm related homicides were static, more or less the same. So how is that even possible? And so that was my answer to her. And of course, she just looked at me like I was garbage. And one thing I think is really important, and I will at some point be able to ask one of these, you know, liars, you know, in person, is when they're talking about all the evidence that they have. And then I will ask them about that. Well, have you looked into why the numbers that I just mentioned exist? And the answer will be no. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, let me get this straight. You're holding yourself out as an expert. You said that the evidence is completely conclusive, but yet you have never considered the biggest piece of evidence. Why, how can you be a credible voice if you've never, ever even looked into that piece of evidence? You've only looked into the evidence that has confirmed your conclusion, your predetermined conclusion. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is the problem that we have. But anyway, okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to finish our list and talk about some of the best moments of 2019 for the CCFR.
What would you think if you heard the government decided that your rifle or shotgun is now too dangerous to own? What if they told you that you couldn't keep it at your house, that you had to pay to store it at some central storage facility? What if they told you that you had to surrender it for destruction or go to jail? These actions are being discussed in government in Canada right now. Think about this. Have you taken any action whatsoever to prevent this from happening? Well, you can. For $40 a year, you can support the hardest working firearm organization in Canada, the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, and get $5 million worth of insurance. The CCFR lobbies government and works to improve the public image of gun owners through media and educational campaigns. Protect your own ability to own and use firearms before it's too late. Go to firearmrights.ca and click Why Join. That's firearmrights.ca.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Okay, we're back. All right, another thing that was really great was TACOM. That was a good experience, no?
TACOM was amazing, and I, you know, it's pretty young. That's a pretty young show, and I got to tell you, they just knocked it out of the park. It was so great on so many levels. There's just so many good things about that show. I hate to think about what will happen to it if the Liberals get their way.
Yeah, it'll be a show of lever actions painted black with red dots on them.
What was really neat for me at TACOM was, I did a lot of handshaking and in the booth and media stuff and stuff like that. But I also was really interested in hearing the speakers. They had a big stage set up for anybody who missed it. They had a stage set up and they had slotted time slots for different speakers on different topics and some panels and things like that. And I went to see quite a few that were interesting to me personally. And of course, and then Rod, you had your time slot. So you appeared on a panel with a bunch of other advocates, but then you had your own speaking time slot. And I get over there and there's not even anywhere to sit. Like, the place is just packed. And it was funny because there was some people I went to see speak where there was, you know, maybe a dozen people spaced out in the seating gallery, and it looked so empty, and I felt so bad about that. And then I go to watch you speak, and of course I couldn't even sit anywhere. It was just packed solid. So I love that. I thought it was a great opportunity to get out in front of everybody and, you know, get the rear for a little bit.
Yeah. I really appreciated that support. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really appreciated it. Yeah. That was great. Hopefully the next one, we can delay any action till past the next one and maybe even get rid of it altogether again. Who knows? There could be another election soon. But one of the other things I did want to mention is our television show. Now, it didn't happen in 2019 as far as the new show is concerned. Mm-hmm. But I've been approving episodes, as you may imagine. But this past week, the show did premiere. So mm-hmm. I sat down with my family and turned it on the TV, and watched it like any other show. And man, is it ever beautiful. So Corey and Doug and the guys over there, the coat of arms guys, did just a fantastic job. And I will say this, the show this season is what it was always meant to be. It's the cinematography is beautiful. It flows. It was just, it's really, really great. Really proud of it.
Well, I like to think, I know that this is season two. So technically you're right. It's not a 2019 thing, but I almost feel like season two is like a rebirth, right? I feel like it's a rebirth of the show. Like, I feel like it's almost starting over because, you know, it was super cool. Season one was super cool and it was exciting. I've got it all on my PVR so I can keep it. And, you know, I really enjoyed watching it, but you're right. Season two blows it away, like completely blows it away. So I do feel like that should be a big, significant, check mark on 2019 because all that work happened within that year. So pretty amazing.
And it was a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
A lot of work. Mm-hmm. So, and then just, I guess this challenge went out in 2019, which is the charity challenge.
Yeah.
And it's been, ignored by everyone except Alan Drummond. So if you haven't seen his response. And again, he's on the executive team of the Spin Doctors for Protection from Guns. So if you want to see what he said about it, his official response, you can go to firearmrights.ca and there's a story there. I can't remember what it's called, but I think it's
an unofficial response. Yeah.
An unofficial response. Yeah. Oh yeah. What a nightmare. And you can see the quality of people have on their board right there. I mean, it speaks volumes of who these people really are, despite whether or not they work in the medical field. But the charity challenge, I think, is really interesting. And, you know, I was on a firearm forum, and I don't go, like, I'm not on social media a lot because, you know, I'm busy, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have time between, you know, reports and TV shows and explainer videos and, you know, TACCOM and gun shows and, you know, AGMs and just all the stuff that we do, and television commercials and sponsorships and all this stuff. Tours and, you know, the longer I think about it, the more stuff we can name. I don't have a lot of time to be on social media. So all that to say, I did go on to a firearm forum. So I'm trying to do that a little bit more. And, you know, there's always a few people. I'm not going to say it's a big number of people. It's actually a small number of people, but there's always a few people that have no idea what we're doing. They've never gotten the CCFR. They don't get why what we're doing is valuable and why it needs to continue. They don't understand any of that stuff. So you mix that with a little bit of narcissism and what you get is they're doing it all wrong. And I'm going to spend eight or nine pages of writing over the span of four straight hours to explain what they should be doing without actually doing any of that myself. So it's pretty funny. It's a lot of people misunderstand what we're doing. And I think the charity challenge was a great example of that, but, I don't want to really expose what exactly it is that we're doing, but, you know, always have a little bit of faith that we have a plan. We've done a lot of really interesting stuff that has had a really positive effect. So let me throw a couple of points out there real quick. Number one, some people have a concern. Well, hey, we didn't give you money to give it to charities. And it's like, well, we're not doing that. If Najm Ahmed were to accept this challenge, we would give that money to charity. But here's the thing, we'd get a lot of really valuable footage, which we could use in a documentary later, should maybe a full length documentary happen in the next year. Or we could use it for a number of different purposes. So we are actually getting high value for what we're doing. Number two, if she doesn't accept, the CCFR hasn't spent a dime. And we've made that challenge and had her refuse it and expose them again for not being able to defend their ideas during a simple conversation. They can't do it. There's no way for them to actually accept because they just end up being destroyed. So anyway, and then there's, as far as the charity's concerned, the Big Brothers. We did not inform the Big Brothers that we were choosing to give the money to them, and nor should we. I don't think anybody else has had to, fill out an application to apply to give money to a charity. And we didn't offer them any money either. We were just saying that should we have this challenge accepted, that we would consider them a worthwhile charity. So I think what happened with the Big Brothers is they got trolled. They got trolled probably by Christopher Hallcroft over at the Spin Doctors for Protection from Guns. He was probably sat there and went, oh my God, what am I going to do now? There's no way out of this without looking bad. You know, I'll try to get them in trouble with the charity. And unfortunately, the ladies over there at Big Brothers don't have the, you know, corporate experience on a political level. So they took the bait. And what's the result of that is very interesting. And the result of that is actually quite beneficial for the CCFR. We exposed the level of bigotry that groups like the Spin Doctors for Protection from Guns and the Liberal Party of Canada and a lot of people in the media, they have created such a bigoted attitude towards good people that you had a charity get scared to accept a donation from us. Our members are law enforcement and military and politicians, you know, good people and firearms instructors like myself. We're good, honest people. And apparently our money is so bad that they actually are trying to say that they would refuse our money and that we've somehow put them in the middle. And that is strictly a function of the devastating level of bigotry that has been perpetuated by people like Najm Ahmed and Alan Drummond and, you know, Justin Trudeau and Bill Blair, you know, when you constantly tell the public that somebody that would go through all the stuff that we need to go through to get a firearms license is such a dangerous, horrible person, like literally a bad person, that this is the kind of stuff that you get. And so, speaking of documentaries, this would be a great section of a documentary, this whole experience with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Toronto.
Yeah, I do think they were absolutely trolled 100% because it wasn't up very long before my phone rang, actually. And, you know, it for me, it's unfortunate because when somebody just assumes something about someone without looking into it, it not only makes the person on the receiving end feel bad, it makes the other person look bad. So I know, you know, she had called up and left a message, and I, you know, you spoke with her very briefly, and I called her back and had a conversation with her, and I felt like she was almost seemed shocked at some of the things I was saying. You know, I was just like, oh, we're everyday Canadians, this is who our group's made up of, you know, and she was sort of like, oh, so I don't know who told her what. I can imagine the who, but I can only imagine the what. But whatever she was told about us obviously had to be so terrible that she just, you know, imagine kids looking for help, kids who are desperately in need of help, young people in the city of Toronto, that this organization would just say, no, we don't want your money. It's just mind blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a fantastic example of how bad this has all gotten. You know, you want to talk about divisive rhetoric? Holy crap, man. That's the result of it right there.
Yeah.
Right? We have firearms licenses, man. We're the most vetted people in the country.
Yeah, and, there's, you know, pedophiles that don't have the backgrounds and daily checks that we do. We are the safest demographic. So, yeah, again, this is all rolls right back into why the CCFR exists. And we've got to continue our mandate of advocacy through education. This is literally just people who they don't know any better. They're very susceptible to you know, to what other people are telling them. Somebody like Holcroft could have called them up with some, you know, some level of authority and said, hey, this is the evil gun lobby and they're using you and whatever. Who knows, right? I can only imagine how the conversation went. But unfortunately, yeah, this is just the kind of people we're dealing with. And it's so funny because you think of a doctor, you know, this hero in a white lab coat, right? And you think, you know, you automatically get this impression of them. And it's so funny because the roles are so reversed in this situation that it's terrifying. You know, the people with the guns are the good people and the white coats aren't. So,
bizarre. That's a great way to say it. And it's you'd think that just because someone's a doctor or there's a group of doctors get together, they're automatically good people. And I probably say it every second podcast. I'm constantly shocked at how horrible they really are. And it's, you know, and that's why I think it's really damaging to the doctor-patient relationship, because people are like, oh my God, are they all like this? But anyway, to be clear, I have no idea how the Big Brothers and Sisters got that information. So I'm not going to say that it was Christopher Holcroft himself, but it just sounds like something that he would do. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we'll see. We'll see if Najma accepts. I have my doubts. She only has, what's the date today? The second. She only has eight more days.
Eight more days.
So
yep.
I think we should renew our Twitter invitations and start pushing that information around again.
Yeah.
And make sure that they know. We sent it directly to them, so they know exactly what's all going on. One of my other favorite parts was that community meeting in Toronto where you went and met with some community stakeholders. I mean, when has a gun group ever done that?
Well, you're totally right. That was a really interesting thing. And that's a direct result of the fact that we are just everyday regular people. We may have an extraordinary sport, but just like I said earlier, we also want to find solutions for two reasons. Number one, because we're sick of getting blamed for all the bad things that happen that we don't do. And number two, because we live in these communities. We want them to be safe. And I had been going back and forth on Twitter with some of these community advocacy groups, Zero Gun Violence and Communities for Against Violence. You know, I've been going back and forth with them on Twitter, and I noticed, I said, you know, I feel like they're not anti-gun organizations. I feel like they literally are anti-violence associations, right? Like they are, they have the best interests at heart. I just feel like maybe they, you know, I want to sit down and talk to them more because I feel like our goals align a lot more than what we originally thought. And so, yeah, I made my way to Toronto. We sat down in a big room in the Toronto City Hall. We used one of the big community rooms and we had a big roundtable discussion. I'm telling you, we had a 3-hour meeting booked. We could have easily gone 4 times that long and still not covered everything. There was so much to talk about, so much common ground. These people have literally been used by some of these anti-gun lobbies. You know, it's unfortunate, but they know the truth and they know that these punitive measures against gun owners isn't helping their communities, their youth, their kids, their families. They know it's not helping. It's hurting.
Yeah.
And I still do talk to those groups quite often. And, you know, there may be some room in the future for some other, you know, coalition stuff with them. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunately it all turned political, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of conflict between those groups and the anti-gun groups because the anti-gun groups have really treated them quite poorly.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went out of our way to do that. So I think we've probably talked about enough. This is getting pretty long. So let's wrap it up. Other than to say, you know, look forward to a huge 2020. With the CCFR, we have enormous plans, and what we're going to do this year is going to make what we did last year look like nothing.
That's right. You ain't seen nothing yet. So it is not over, guys. So hang in there.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks, Rod.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 53. I really appreciate all of you listening to the podcast. They're quite widely listened to, and I can't tell you how important it is and how appreciative we are of all the support that all you guys give us, and we couldn't do it without you. And certainly, we couldn't have done everything that we did in 2019 without you, and we can't do it without you in the future. So if you'd like to consider becoming a member of the CCFR, you can do so. Go to firearmrights.ca to become a member, or just donate if you don't want to become a member. That's great too. And then also make sure that you sign up for our email newsletter list. We're going to try to get more newsletters out this year. We've always been terrible at sending out email newsletters, but we're going to try to get a little bit better at that this year. So make sure that you sign up for our newsletter. If you're not a member, you can do that by going to firearmrights.ca, scrolling right down to the bottom, and sign up for it. Other than that, I hope everybody had a great holiday, and looking forward to a lot more progress, hopefully in 2020, or at very least, staving off the attack against some of the most vetted, high-quality Canadians in our society. All right, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.